organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
It must be like Putin there to begin. We must be like Putin there not giving. You must be like Putin, it's just one way. You must be like Putin, you won't run away.
7 minutes after the hour of 5, yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, layering up. Because the hawk is talking outside, we're anticipating the temperatures will plummet to about 16 and lower starting tomorrow. More like Moscow conditions in the spring. And that very song, that Putin song, is number one with two bullets to the back of your head, top 40 in Mother Russia. If you don't get up and dance, that's it. You're off to the gulags in Siberia. But as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us for this broadcast by NJDiet.com, it's high noon involving the four-page memo that Nunes, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee of the House, wants to release because just hours ago, President of the United States on his way back from lecturing and speaking to Republicans in West Virginia has cleared the way for the release of that secret memo, a lot of which has to do with that dossier. It's interesting because Trump, who had a brief window to block the memo's disclosure on national security grounds, is expected tomorrow to go before Congress and say, hey, I've got no objections. I don't want anything redacted. Release it all. It would then be up to Nunes and the House Intelligence Committee to push for its release to make the document public. But also in that same vein, apparently the new FBI director, Christopher Wray, has said he would quit if that GOP pen memo, which supposedly sullies the reputation of the FBI, is released. And I understand from contacts there up on the Hill that Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, is now involved in doing an intervention. Because remember, this was his lawyer during Bridgegate. This is the lawyer, Christopher Wray, who would not turn over his cell phone that would have proved conclusively whether Chris Christie was involved in the cover-up or knew nothing about the cover-up. He was made FBI director on the recommendation that he gave to Donald Trump after he fired James Comey. And remember, how many other cabinet members or members of the West Wing of the White House have threatened that they would leave office? Chief Kelly, Chief of Staff, Tillerson, Secretary of State, Cohen, McGraw. Remember, he was important because he was the White House counsel who supposedly said, no, 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 Mr. President, do not fire Special Prosecutor Mueller or I will quit. And Sessions, who said he would never quit, but would have to be fired. On the line right now to discuss all this, as the news is changing every hour, is David Gletty, former FBI agent. Thanks for joining us again, David, here on the Drive Home at 5.
Hey, thank you very much. Just a correction, operative, not an agent.
Okay, I'm sorry, operative. Now, in reference to this high noon situation, the president wants to release this four-page memo. Apparently, the new FBI director who replaced James Comey is threatening to resign if he does. What does that do to the FBI if, in fact, hypothetically, the president pulls the trigger, the memo is released, and the FBI director resigns in protest?
Just to speak frankly for your New York audience, it'll start the neutering of the FBI because it's going to be embarrassing. First thing they're going to lose is power when the taxpayers, the American citizens, see how horrible the FBI has been violating the constitutional rights of Americans, no matter who they are. It's going to be very embarrassing, very embarrassing. It's like your son getting caught, being arrested for the first time as a teenager. That's the last thing you want your neighbors to know. It's going to be very embarrassing, and people will be resigning over this. Let those people resign that are threatening to, because guess what? They're not going to stick these agents in regular prisons or jails. They got places like Guantanamo for these people. They can't stick someone with security clearance of their nature into a regular prison.
Now, why do you think it is so systemic, these what we'll call out of sight, out of mind tactics of the FBI are? Why do they appear to be so frightened by what will be released in these four-page document by the Republicans?
The erosion of, like I said a moment ago, erosion of public trust is just going to be horrible. I can tell you firsthand how I was convinced into doing the right thing. You know, violating criminals' rights was a good thing. You know, when you know, we're taught CYA mode, you know, cover your butt mode. It seems like the first thing when things go wrong, that's what we go into, is CYA mode. But it needs to be out there for everyone to see, you know, out in the sunshine. It's going to help out the administration in power, because they did promise to clean up, to drain the swamp. And my God, this is going to, you know, the FBI is going to take a big hit over this. Like I said last week in our last interview, people will be resigning in shame. You know, think about what it does to the family members. And that's another reason it is kind of sensitive. Think of how the wives of these agents are going to feel, who just stood by their man all these years. And they don't know what goes on in the office. You know, they're just there taking care of the kids in the home. Think about the kids. So there is a lot of collateral damage, but I believe that that's not what the upper hierarchies are worried about. They're worried about loss of power and going to jail.
Now, Adam Schiff, who is the Democratic leader, although in the minority in the House Intelligence Committee, to Nunes, who is the majority representing the Republicans, had this to say about that four-page memo that we expect to be dropped at some point tomorrow.
What we see in the Republican memo is a terrible mischaracterization of the events. So we set out the proper events in their context in our own memoranda, which we will again force the Republicans to vote on next week. I think it's going to be unsustainable for them to take the position that they want the country only to see this very biased account.
Now, the Republicans will drop their memo. Don't you think that there ought to be equal time given to the response of Democratic memo?
Absolutely. I think it should go through the same process that the Republicans' memo went through and release it all. Your audience out there in New York are some of the smartest, fastest thinking in the world. I've been there. I get ran over in traffic. They think very fast. I'm a slow Southern thinker. But release it to everyone. Your audience deserves the right to see what's out there and let them make up their mind. Don't, the worst thing is to tell us, you know, I don't need anyone filtering, like the news filtering what I'm about to read. We're all smart enough as Americans, no matter what we believe in, who we voted for, to process information. Read it, get it out there, let us all read it, let us make up the mind, because we are the boss. We vote. We put these people in office. Don't let anyone fool you. We hold the power with your precious vote, something that many, many Americans have died for.
Now,
use your power. Stand up, no matter what you believe in.
Now, David Galletti, former FBI operative, Stephen King, the congressman from Iowa, predicted this would be worse than Watergate.
Then what I saw and what I believe happened could go on in perpetuity, and we become a banana republic. This is earth-shaking, and it does go deeper than Watergate, and the memo doesn't answer it all
Watergate.
By any means.
How is it deeper than Watergate?
Deeper than Watergate. And how is it deeper? Because the FBI and the DOJ, by the information that I have observed and the testimony that I have, I'm going to say the testimony that I have analyzed from listening to and questioning multiple members of the FBI and the DOJ, tells me that the FBI and DOJ have been weaponized.
Weaponized. And worse than Watergate was, boy, that was the biggest black eye that our government has ever had, our presidency, in the history of this republic. Do you think it might approach that, David?
No, absolutely. Let me tell you the abuses firsthand. We were weaponized. The civilians, they use us as headhunters. We didn't take the oath to hold up the rights of the Constitution for criminals. So all it takes is a civilian, a citizen, to start an investigation on anyone. They send us in as civilians to check out John Smith. We come back and say, yeah, we saw something there. Then they let us go on for 6 months. We're going to find anything. Give us 6 months. We get paid. We're going to find anything out on you. It might be your friends, might be your wife, your mother. We're going to find anything. And in a sense, that's all it takes. and your rights are violated all the way down the line.
Do appreciate that. It's David Gladdy from the heartland of America, as he said, from a southern perspective. Boy, he gave props to our audience. But you know something? He was absolutely spot on when he said, we should be privy to both reports. The four pages of Nunes that we expect will be dropped tomorrow. Although that may be delayed if Christopher Wray is really serious about resigning, because, boy, that'll cause a lot of problems for the Trump administration. He's brand new. Recommended by Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie. Remember, it was Wray who was one of the lead attorneys for Chris Christie, the governor then during Bridgegate, and refused to turn that cell phone over that would have determined Chris Christie's guilt or innocence in that entire cabal.
Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 577 WABC.
Darling, can't you see my signals turn from green to red? And with you, I can see a traffic jam.
All right.
Straight up ahead.
All right, Purple Haze. Jimi Hendrix, calm down. So crosstown traffic. Well, how many of you are listening to our traffic guide for many of you, Jeff McKay? And he's constantly talking about backups crossing the GW Bridge from the Manhattan side, but more importantly, coming in from the Jersey side. And especially of late, because the side roads that some car drivers would have taken through the streets of Leona have been shut down to them during morning drive and evening drive. And now all of a sudden there's backlash. In fact, a lot of the local people in surrounding communities are saying, hey, that's not fair. And apparently there are some legal actions underway. In order to find out what they involve, let's speak with attorney Jacqueline Emrosa, partner at Siegel Law Group. Thanks for joining us, Jacqueline.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me on.
Okay, well, explain to me what the legal strategy is here and who are you actually representing in this case?
So I filed this action pro se, meaning I am representing myself. Obviously, there are a lot of people that have standing to represent and be a plaintiff as well, but I felt that it was necessary to get it underway, so I'm representing myself. The legal action is basically, if you read my complaint, which is available online, it's a public record, I find that it's the new ordinance is arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. It has caused a backup on our highways. It is an ordinance that they've enacted is in violation of state ordinance, which basically says that if you are making a municipal law on a town road that it impacts a state law, you need approval from the commissioner. And even more importantly, it's infringing on a basic constitutional right that myself and thousands of people have, which is to travel freely.
Now, you would say that is the commissioner of the Department of Transportation in Trenton?
Yes, that is correct.
All right, but the police commissioner of Leona originally stated why they were closing those neighborhood roads that lead to the GWB during both rush hours.
Leonia is a very small town, 9,200 people, with a small police department of 18 officers, inclusive of myself. However, the proximity to New York City and the fact that we have three exits off of the New Jersey Turnpike that feed traffic into our borough creates traffic havoc.
Now, can you empathize and sympathize with his problem?
Yes, I can absolutely empathize and sympathize with his problem. I'm a resident of Edgewater, which is a neighboring town of Leonia. Edgewater probably gets just as much, if not more, traffic than Leonia, since we are directly across from New York City. I think every town surrounding New York City on the New Jersey side, Leonia, Englewood, Teaneck, Palisades Park, Englewood Cliffs, and the list goes on and on, has this same issue. This is not just a Leonia issue. This is a Bergen County issue and a state issue. Anyone that has either grown up in or lived in Bergen County knows that this is a high traffic area. This is not a problem that has happened overnight. This is something that's always been around, especially because we live close to the city, and the closer you get to New York City, the more traffic you're going to have. So while I can completely understand Leonia's position, their position is no different than any other town in Bergen County or any of the other counties surrounding the state.
All right, but Attorney Jacqueline Amrosa, you do realize that anything that happens in and around the George Washington Bridge now has national ramifications ever since Bridgegate and
yes.
cutting off lanes and actually the debacle it created for Chris Christie and, more importantly, the drivers who use the GW Bridge. So have you fathomed, since you're representing yourself pro se, have you fathomed a possible solution to this dilemma that just continues to grow?
Well, as I'm not the mayor of the town, so the solution to the problem is not particularly in my hands. The solution to the problem, I think, is on the mayors of the surrounding towns. I think the solution is on the county and the people who run the state to find a better solution. But I think that the way Leonia is going about finding their solution is infringing on the public's right. So I think that the heads of these towns need to get together and come up with a better solution that's not going to impede on the public's ability to commute every day.
Now, you know what they're probably going to do, knee-jerk reaction, following the footsteps of the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo's suggestion to traffic problems in Manhattan. They might come together and suggest some form of congestion pricing for those who don't necessarily live in those communities. Is that something you could live with, where if you're coming through those side streets, but you're not a resident during the peak rush hours, a.m. and p.m., you just pay more of a price?
I don't want to speak to something that could possibly happen, but if that's something that our government thinks is appropriate, obviously if the entire state of New Jersey agrees on it, then as a citizen of the state, I will back that. But globally thinking about it, I do not think that's a good solution, because all these towns are small towns and we live so close to each other. How is a person supposed to go town to town doing what they need, going to the bank, going to the gym, bringing their kids to school? And there's a lot of these towns where the schools transcend other towns. They don't just stay in that same town. So to put a global fine going from town to town, I don't think would actually solve the problem.
Do appreciate that. In fact, ever since I was a kid in the 60s, and I would cross the GW Bridge with my family, and we go to Palisades Park, swings all day and after dark, concert by Bobby Rydell and the world's largest saltwater pool with an artificial wave. But now you go nearby in Cliffside Park, all the signs are in Korean. Go to Fort Lee, you can't make a right turn. You're going round and round and round and round. And you can't go through Leona in order to get on the GW Bridge between AM Drive and PM Drive, especially when you're listening to me.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
You got to know when to hold them.
When to hold
them. Know when to fold them.
5:39 as we continue here on the Drive Home at 5. Now, you might have seen Kenny Rogers in Atlantic City. If he gets one more facelift, his face will snap like an old rubber band. But if you went to the Borgata and you wanted a bet in sports, ixnay, as successful a gambling operation that is. And there's now the case before the United States Supreme Court that was pushed by Shamu LFA Chris Christie. It'll be determined soon whether that exists. But it all leads us to what's going to happen on Sunday between the Philadelphia Criminal Eagles and the Tom Brady, the Brady Bunch, and the Coach Belichick Cheaters. And that is that there's a lot of money already being bet. Office pools right here at WABC percolating. Extra boxes have to be set up. 40% of workers in America anticipated to participate in their local pools. And then we see the trial involving Joseph Skinny Joey Merlino that we'll be dealing with up next about organized crime. He pleads to being a degenerate gambler, but let's face it, there are a lot of wire rooms that will do their best business on shore for Super Bowl Sunday bets. And then off in Costa Rica. And in the Cayman Islands, the dollars being bet will just be mind-boggling. On the NFL side, the overpaid commissioner, I think he's going to be paid $40 million now, Goodell, says no to sports gambling. Yet his colleague at the NBA, Adam Silver, says it's time. To discuss it further, let's speak with Karsten Kuhrl. He's the CEO of Sport Radar US. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Karsten.
Hi. Thanks for having me in the show. Great event, great introduction. Very nice how you see the commissioners. So, a very interesting view.
Now, how do you think this should be resolved? Because clearly, you have two strong entities battling one another. Those that want online betting and also sports betting, and those who obviously just want to keep it the way it's always been. You want to bet, you go to a casino, you have games, you have electronic betting at some of the casinos, but absolutely no sports betting or online betting.
Well, look, I'm not so sure that the discussion is so polarized. I think everybody understands the volume being wagered at the moment abroad from U.S. citizens is anything between a $200 billion on the low end and I heard already a $400 billion on the high end. We have relations and provide services to around about 550 betting operators worldwide. So my guess is the real amount is somewhere in the middle, meaning it's a $300 billion leaving the country at the moment in wages. And everybody understands that this is not good for the taxes. It's not good for the control. So I think there is a strong intention from everybody in that game, the regulators, the legislators, and also the leagues, to find a way how to channelize this and how to organize it in a legal way for U.S. citizens.
Well, so, some of your biggest critics, Karsten, in trying to move in that direction have been members of law enforcement, whether at the federal level, the FBI, or local levels, who said, no, you can't allow for legalized sports gambling because it's going to cause all kinds of problems, especially with some trying to fix games, you know, whether it's point shaving in the NBA, whether it's fixing the over-under in professional football. They just imagine a series of nightmarish situations which are going to require them to investigate and start making arrests.
Well, my answer to all of this is, do you think that's not existing already? That money is there. It's being wagered. So you think this is now a new situation if gambling is legalized, that you have match fixing and that you have people shaping and trying to manipulate? I think that is an illusion. So these things are there, and it is highly time that you get that into a regulated environment and that you have proper processes organized behind this. So I think this is the right reaction on the situation which is there.
Now, as you know, in casino board games or racinos, electronic games, the state gets part of the proceeds. Obviously, the private entrepreneurs, the private corporations that own it get another percentage. What do you think would be fair, Karsten Kuhrl, in terms of a split? Whereas if you have a company that's clearly advertising that it is open for sports betting, and then a state that it operates in, or even the United States, because it could well end up becoming a nationwide situation if the United States Supreme Court rules in the affirmative. What do you think would be a fair split so that the taxpayers truly benefit?
Well, look, a fair split is if every sport can participate. A fair split is if every state is getting a share of whatever is being wagered in the state. I think the best would be a federal legislation. It doesn't look like this. It looks like a state by state. And for this reason, I like to leave it up to the states and to the sports. But I think you need to consider it's not only the big four sports. It's also smaller sports. It's golf. It's NASCAR, whatsoever. You need to consider how they should participate. And probably the best is, but that is only my blonde idea from Europe, why not having a tax and then everybody can participate on this tax payment, which is first and foremost the state and then the taxpayer, but also the leagues which participate in this and all the sports.
Do appreciate that. That's Karsten Kuhrl, CEO of Sport Radar US, obviously promoting that there be open sports betting in every state in the nation. But I want to pimp off of what I said. I'm going to go into it full-blown in the next segment about the geriatric espresso-sipping psychotic killers of organized crime. But an adversary of mine, when I was organizing Southeast Philadelphia 6th Street, was Joseph Giuseppe, Skinny Joey Merlino. And the guy was skinny, but treacherous, killer. In fact, at the time of the battles between Atlantic City and the Philly mob in South Philadelphia, he was playing the double dutch. But he'd stab you in the back if there was a nickel on the ground. And he acts like, oh, no, no, no. I'm just a degenerate gambler. That's his defense in federal court. I'm just like everyone else out in America. You know, like Justin B. Love. You know, he's been betting on action ever since he got all enthralled at the, Iron Bowl there in Birmingham. You know, the annual battle between Clemson and the Tide rolling Alabama. He was shining shoes outside in a shine box and then taking those proceeds and betting it. That's right. Although he's a Clemson guy, he said, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. I'm betting on this action here. And then look at Brian Mangalucci over at WFAN. That would be his dream position. The reason that they won't hire him there is because he plays all kinds of action. I mean, even badminton, lacrosse, lawn bowling. He's a degenerate gambler, like the former morning show host there, Craig Carton. Oh, yeah, Craig in his mansion there. He's probably still taking action and placing bets. You know, WFAN, I think every host over there is a degenerate gambler. Hey, look, our own Sid Rosenberg, right, copped a plea and said he was a degenerate gambler. But the wire rooms will be cooking all weekend long, taking Super Bowl action on the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick and his cheaters. And naturally, the Philadelphia Criminal Eagles. Oh, they'll be rolling in scattle.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
5:55. This is my favorite segment of the Drive Home at 5 about the geriatric espresso sipping psychotic killers of organized crime, the mobsters choking down their lobsters. But another reason I don't trust the FBI, forever busting Italians. Imagine they took $25,000 of taxpayers' money in order to set up a sit down and a dinner in honor of leaders of the Cosa Nostra in both Philadelphia, in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, and Westchester at the Genovese crime family's Pasquale Patsy Merlino's restaurant right there on Arthur Avenue, which I will never go to, Pasquale's Rigoletto. Do not go there. All you're doing is you're funding the Genovese remnants of Vinny the Chin Chicanti's legacy and his consigliere, Benny Eggs Mangano. Look at this. They spent $25,000 to arrange this sit down. All the leaders came and they were on film and audio. And as a result, they not only busted, who's on trial now in downtown federal court, Philadelphia mob boss Joseph Skinny Joey Merlino, whose defense is I'm a degenerate gambler, but all the other major leaders. And you say to yourself, how foolish is that? You pay for their dinner. They call it the Cosa Nostra Last Supper. You give $25,000 to the head of the Genovese crime family, Pasquale Patsy Perello. He makes all the money. Just so you could get them all together so that eventually you could put them on the daisy chain perp walk, indict them, and then eventually try them. You know, that's the easy route, not busting your shoes. You know, we call that the white collar route to making indictments. When in fact, good old fashioned police work, busting your shoes would have led to the same arrest. And instead, you spend our money, which is what government is all about. Spending our hard earned moolah schmoolah.